You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
7 minutes after 10, it is the second hour of the show. We're going to change conversations now. Well, sort of. I think this first track I'm going to play might not be much of a change, but not my bars that I'm dropping. It's Slickers, so he's responsible for that. But there's a couple of conversations I want to have with you. I know that many of you love hip-hop, and I want us to discuss South African hip-hop, both the history when it comes to its relationship with social and political commentary, and then also some questions about what counts as appropriate comment or not, or you can, quite frankly, rap about whatever it is that you want. To. And then there's also a version of a conversation we've previously had on the Literature Corner, funny enough, about who gets to tell and write which stories. Well, the same goes for other art forms, and rap is no different. If you are some privileged kid that went to St. John's, let's call you for argument's sake, Sizwe Mpofu Walsh, are you allowed to be able to rap about the experiences of people on the margins of society in Hillbrow and Yeovil that you see from a distance while you are at St. John's? Is that a kind of, I wouldn't call it cultural appropriation as one critic might suggest, but rather kind of class appropriation as it were? Or does it not matter what the identity and the experiences of the rapper happens to be? If they are good from an aesthetics point of view, and if their content is relevant, and if you just love dancing to it, quite apart from whether it's conscious or not, is that enough? Or does it matter who raps and who raps about what in this country? So those are some of the issues I want to open up. And if you are someone who is deeply passionate about your hip-hop, its relationship with social and political commentary, give us a call throughout the hour as you hear the different parts of the conversation. Chime in. This is your show as much as it is ours. In Cape Town on 021-446-0567 and here in Jersey on 011-883-0702. DJ Dineo, what is the first song you're going to play?
Why am I DJ? So the track we're going to play is by a slicker called Blacks Are Fools.
Oh, controversial. Mm-hmm. Controversial. Are you subtweeting your listeners from the open line?
No, I'm not. People must just listen to the lyrics. I remember when the song came out, people were so mad. I only listened to the song recently. So people must just calm down and listen to the track and then make up their minds.
Cool. I think that's a cool track. And I've just looked at the lyrics again. Love it. Some hard truths there. I'm not sure why this was controversial. Anyway, we're going to discuss this track and many others and some of the themes. With me here in the studio is Oliver Dixon, who's a social and political commentator. He loves popular culture and hip-hop, and I know you will have a lot to say. He's such a good guest. He's holding back and just being all very quiet here. How's it, Oliver? Thanks for coming here.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. The first person I want to speak to, though, is while we're having for a couple of minutes on the line, is actually Slicker, how's it?
How you doing, you?
I'm good, man. That particular track, I don't know why. Do you know why so many people find it controversial? What are your thoughts on how it has played out over the years?
Well, I mean, I think people thought it was controversial because they never knew that I could see the future. That track is almost eight, 9 years old.
I know, but I think some people were also cheesed off because they thought that the content in terms of the messaging was just unfair on black people, that we're not blaming white people. It's not that we all want BEE, but the truth of the matter is that it's tough being black in this country, and it kind of like came across, I'm just parroting what some of the critics think. They think that track comes across as basically saying, you know, if you have bootstraps, which we don't have, pull yourself up, black person, stop being a fool and blaming whites and blaming other things other than yourself.
Well, I mean, that wasn't really the thing. The thing was that, like, as you've mentioned, all our disadvantages as black people, we still can't find a purpose to kind of work together. So these guys, if you learn about how wealth is built through people working together and passing information. I mean, this is how, like, the Jewish community has been built. This is how the Muslim community has been built. So as us, as people who keep on saying the struggle and keep putting the struggle forward, we not actually, like, saying, so how are we reacting to make our lives better? And all the other races look at us and go, but they've got it. They're still not working together, so they're fools. And I'm like, no, we're better than that. We're better than that. There's hope. So, you know, I think that's how it is. It wasn't really like We fools for that. It was just really like a case of we've been seen as fools because we've got all this, I mean, yes, political power, which, like, there's so much money flowing with that political power, but it's not flowing to rebuild us for the next 50, 100 years to say, now we can get economical power, because economical power is not handed over. It's a gradual thing. It's a generational thing, you know?
I'm with Slick on this one. Oliver, what do you think?
No,
is that too much Jonathan Jansen in that track?
Both you and Slick are wrong. And the song is controversial for the right reasons. Slicker understands the consequences of the problem, but doesn't give fair consideration to the origin of the problem. The origin of the problem is not that blacks are fools, it's that white capital still determines the future of black prospects. And placing that blame squarely on black people is unfair, incredibly unfair. And this is why that song is unfair.
You're hearing it wrong. You see, you came in with the perspective of you thinking you understand, but the reality, what I'm saying to you is that, like, I used two keywords. I said generational. I said there's money flowing within environments where black people have got influence, not economically, but politically. And politically, money is not being redirected to a place where we can build things that in a generation could literally put us there forward economically. Because white capital wasn't done in one generation, and neither will black capital be built in one generation. If you are literally arguing to inherit everything that the Western world has built, when will black people start building their own businesses that kids in the hood say, I want to work in this environment? And that's what we need to do. We need to build our own businesses. But this takes time. This takes, like, political influence to invest in economical ideas that are not Western influence, or that don't come from a Western culture. We can balance it, but we need to start finding these things. And that's part of the work that we have to do with researching and understanding what are these things that make black kids in the hood tick and go, I want to be in that environment. I want to work in that environment. And this is what white capital has done for every generation throughout the years.
We've got Caesar here as well. Caesar, can you adjudicate this debate?
Slicker, what's up? Oliver, what's up?
All good, man.
You know, I'm gonna find you in the street, so you better say the right thing.
Yeah, no, look.
I hear Oliver's politics on this issue, but I also can see some people saying, no, you CBS, Oliver, someone is saying this on Twitter, is getting distracted by the title of this track. Actually, the lyrical content is not reductionist. Yeah. What do you think?
Look, I love the track, and I think what we often do with particularly hip-hop, because it's black art, is only give it one layer. And what I think Slicker is doing in the song is actually making a sarcastic and ironic remark. I don't think he's necessarily saying blacks are fools just because he says blacks are fools. I think he's making the ironic point that if we subscribe to this misguided notion, then we are fools. But if you listen to the song and you see the things he's built and you see the music he's made,
no, obviously there
then
are
he's
a lot
actually
of concessions
making
the opposite
point. So
there are a lot of concessions to be made in the song. Slicker's largely correct about the song, but wrong about the conclusion. Right, that he draws about the symptoms of the problem. So it's not like
but
black people.
I don't think
there's
just one conclusion. Yeah. I think there are multiple layers or ways you could read it.
Yeah, but the conclusion in this one is that we ought to take some blame, and I disagree there. For instance, it's black people. It's not like black people aren't creating law firms and accounting firms. They are. They're just being stifled by these organizations that behave like oligarchies. KPMG to be one example there. You can't compete when there's KPMG in your market. So literally, black people are doing actually all the things Slicker say we're not doing. Right, it's just that we're not getting to where we're supposed to be getting because again, historical injustices has made impossible, even for those with what you think would be infinite political power to actually make some of these changes, because the capital they're going up against is just so powerful.
So, you know, I don't want you to create like animosity between myself and black entrepreneurs. So I'm going to stop you right there. Because I'm a black entrepreneur myself. So I don't speak as a rapper. I speak as a black entrepreneur. The problem is not the black entrepreneurs that actually get up and try and make solutions. The problem is like the mass black people that have also been conditioned to believe that like westernized things are actually more priority. Because if we look at it, even when you look at how marketing has been placed in the market, they always talk about the emerging black market, the emerging black market, which means that there's money flowing within us. So where is the emerging black market spending their money? So my thing is that there are a lot of black entrepreneurs who literally like, whose money, who the black emerging market is not spending their money in their businesses because A, they've never seen like maybe a black credible business in their lives because like we've been influenced by westernized. And I'm not saying they have, I'm just using that as an example. So let's not create animosity between the fact that they are black entrepreneurs. We acknowledge and black entrepreneurs, and not even only like the black consumer. It's also like companies that like that literally don't trust like black companies to go, well, you know, should we put money into these companies? It's also government that actually doesn't go, should we invest in this company to actually like do this and that and grow them? No, don't give them the whole tender then maybe, but grow them to a point where they can eventually get there. And those are hand-holding things, and those are processes that need to be created. So I wouldn't want you to position me as a guy who just wrote a song but doesn't run a business and doesn't understand.
No, I agree with you. And look, I'll close off with this one on this. I think there's a reason why Slicker and R perhaps, and look, I don't know what your financials look like, but I think there's a reason why you're not making as much money as News 24, for instance. And that's nothing to do with your talent.
I'm going to cut you there quickly. I'll tell you why. Because News 24 was actually and sold a conglomerate, was started before I even started any type of business. But I can tell you that, like, the way my business is going as a digital platform, I found ways to make money that News 24 can never make money in. I'm a rapper making money off media. So I'm just saying News 24 can't make money off rap, if you know what I mean. But I'm making
except
money
off
piece of music. They can't make money off rap music and a rap song, and I can do that. So I'm saying to you is that I've taught myself to make money off rap music in a world that doesn't make money. And I've taught myself to make money off media, and I'm consistently learning that. So you can't talk about News 24 where they've built the processes. And that's another problem with you. You've been conditioned to try put me in a level of a News 24 when black people, we're not only developing monetarily, but we're also developing with insights and knowledge to make sure that we build a foundation that doesn't be moved.
Slicker, I love you enough to want you to make as much money as News 24.
Any chance I can have my show back, Slicker?
No, I'm using
very quickly, Slicker.
Don't compare westernized business that have insights and foundations and knowledge that's been developed, which when we are developing that for our market, and we're also mixing some westernized influence. So let's not make that mistake. Let's not put ourselves on number 10 when we're still number 5, and we still have to grow ourselves to number 10. And some of that growing also needs us to find the initiative to grow ourselves. We can't be given that growth.
Okay, cool stuff. 23 minutes after 10. Let's take a bit of a breather.
CBS Makaiza on 702 and Cape Talk.
Okay, let's slow down the conversation a little bit, Cesar. I didn't mean to put Slicker's track on trial, but I love the passion between you guys. I think he is exhibit A in response to the question that I actually wanted to ask that was just meant to be a segue into, which is how political and how socially conscious South African hip-hop is in terms of its roots and its history. Just school those of us who don't know. I mean, is there a long history, or is that kind of track that we've just discussed, whatever we think of the lyrical content, is that an exception to the rule?
I think it is. I think there's a long history. I think, in fact, the genesis of South African hip-hop, particularly in its Cape Town, Cape Tonian form, comes from a lot of political expression. You know, the revolution was hard, days were dark, things were hard, but now we got to play our part. You know, that's kind of in the era when South Africa was making its transition, hip-hop started becoming an interesting genre and a political genre. Of course, over time, there have still been these voices, you know, so you take it from a POC era to a squatter camp era, which Slicker was a part of, and there was some commercial content, but there was also some political content. You know, the fact that they were even called squatter camp was a political statement. But when hip-hop became a phenomenon, I would say in the last 5 years, ironically coinciding with the second Zuma term. I don't know what the causality is there. Something about
causal
opulence.
Correlation,
I think it's, something about opulence. Just, I think we saw it become a commercial phenomenon as well. And we've seen the proliferation of a lot more materialistic and obviously consumeristic hip hop in this era. And so what I've tried to do with my project is try to bring back a little bit of that older essence. But of course, there are a lot of artists doing that right now.
Oliver, I want to bring you in here. I think you've got a view about some of these issues that's similar to mine. And obviously, there's a version of the following statement that is trivially true, but I think you mean it in a different sense, that all art and all hip-hop is political.
Yeah. So the example Caesar just made is that it was political, became very commercial. Even that commercial is very political. Everything is
unpack
political.
That first,
of
what do you mean by that?
So here's, and look, let's use the backdrop of Karen's article. She her criticism to South African hip hop is that it's going to be
just contextualize it. Who's Karen for those who didn't read it?
Karen Williams is the person who wrote a very scathing criticism of South African hip hop and by extension Caesar here. And a lot of what she said was that SA hip hop is so commercial, so materialistic and trivial that it doesn't provide enough political commentary.
So, for the record, we did invite her. She declined the offer. Maybe she's going to drop, I don't know, a track in response to this conversation.
So, and look, firstly, everything is political. The distinction we should be making is what's good politics from bad politics, right? And that's where we start having the discourse. So hip hop is innately political. This is why Slick and I have a disagreement about certain things, because it's political. So Karen made an example of Ricky Rick's track, Buy It Out. And this is where Ricky Rick goes and says, I walk into the Gucci store and I buy it out. I walk into the Louis store and I buy it out. She doesn't think that's political, or at least not political enough for her.
For her,
okay. It is political because Ricky Rick is the same guy who complains that South African brands and South African organizations aren't supporting South African organizations. Okay. While Ricky, you're a South African artist not supporting South African brands. That is a political statement on the economic activity in South Africa.
So she's conflating the question, is it political, with do I agree with you?
Yes, 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 yes.
Okay, we're going to take your calls on this. Give us a call on 011-883-0702 and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567.
702. Eusebius is on Twitter at Eusebius.
Okay, Caesar, I want to bring you in here quickly. Mm. Obviously, people love this conversation, so we've got plenty of calls we want to take, and you guys can engage the callers.
Yeah.
I just want to know, let's pursue the nerdishness precision of language here.
Sure.
Do you agree with Oliver that there's a sense, not a trivially true sense, but an important, substantive sense in which all hip-hop is political? Because the last time I had you on here with Slicker, actually, you were driving a wedge between political hip-hop and some people are just hounding on about what they're doing with their money and it's champagne, darling.
I think Slicker was actually right. And I think I've moderated my views somewhat. I agree with Oliver that there's political content in pretty much any form of speech, especially hip hop. But what I would caution against is, you know, when we look at a Picasso, we're able to look at it from a number of different perspectives. And the intention of the artist is just one aspect of the dimension of that art. But often when it comes to political rap or just hip hop, often I think because it comes from black artists, we think it only has one dimension or one layer. And I would urge us to look at a work of rap with as much complexity as we do any other work of art. And so there are lots of layers, some of which the artist didn't even intend to imbue inside the art. And so that's why I think there's a much more complex debate to be had about materialism and hip hop, because even if art doesn't have an emancipatory aim, that doesn't mean it doesn't have emancipatory consequences. So for me in my life, for example, hearing confident black expression, even if it was completely socially misguided, was one of the only places I could ever go to hear a black person speak confidently. And I believe the hip-hop audience is smart enough to choose which parts of the music they agree with and which parts they don't. And so I think rap and hip hop is a lot more complex even than just the intention of what artists mean. And we need to read into it with the complexity that we do with all other art.
Sure. Fair enough. 24 minutes before 11, let's go to the lines. We've got the editor of Hype magazine with us, Rue. How's it? Welcome to the show.
Yo, thank you so much, guys. What's up?
Do you think all hip hop necessarily has political content?
Yeah, I'm going to agree to that. I think it does because, like I said, I was just thinking out loud that, you know, it all depends on, like, packaging, you know, and how everything is packaged. Because with regards to, you know, the types of hip-hop that we have, you can make, like, a trap beat or a trap song and somebody would find some sort of, like, political connection to it, but then I wouldn't because I'm expecting it to be in a more conscious, you know, package or more conscious approach. So I think anybody can find some sort of like political connection with you know all genres. I mean all methods of creating hip hop music, without a doubt.
Do you agree?
Branding political hip hop as necessarily conscious is dangerous because you miss the real political commentary, which is not so conscious. You miss, for instance, MT, very popular rapper, doesn't use consciously sounding music with a 60-piece orchestra behind him, and some like sophisticated metaphors to make his point, right? Uses very trappy sounding beats, uses very slang words that don't really have an etymology itself, and is still incredibly political. Still goes up in the club. For instance, and it's not a South African example, but when Kendrick Lamar dropped the song Swimming Pools, that was a club banger, but that song was entirely about alcoholism. Right? That's people missed that part, particularly because I guess it was a little bit too trappy. A song about alcoholism in South Africa, for instance, Ricky Rick is another example. Ricky Rick expressed on his music multiple times he does not drink, despite having been the face of an alcoholic brand. A song about alcoholism would relate very strongly to a young colored kid in Upington, for instance, who knows what alcoholism means, for instance, to his family. It may be on a trappy beat, but it's political. It may be a club banger, but it's entirely political.
Okay, let's go to, how's it, Michael?
Hi there. I just wanted to say, hip-hop, it is quite a very interesting thing because I think culture affects music, but it doesn't go the inverse way. And, the hip-hop mainstream in America has been one of the main influences to South African hip-hop. And I think that's what causes this almost watered-down, Travis Scott. Like, there's a lot of people doing kind of the same sound, and it's, women, drugs, alcohol, but I think of it as a piece of work of art, but I think that the conscious rappers are not the ones that are able to, get a foot in this industry. There's no space for people to make their CDs, to make their music. I go into, because I have a group in Google Earth called The Ammo, I go into the township, and some of these kids, they're 21, they have no job, they haven't had a job, they haven't finished matric, they're trying to be rappers, and they're just so many, and there's not space for them, There has to be a larger economic, redistribution in this country before we can talk about anything, because it just seems like no one has the possibility of doing anything. And Zuma has basically just run our country into the ground. And what can we do? We're just wasting in a pool of dirt.
I'm just chuckling there. It's waiting. At some point, Zuma has to enter the analysis. When in doubt, blame Zuma. But, this is an interesting one. Ru, I just want to get one more viewpoint from you before we take a break, because this will set us up nicely. We've already put Slicker on trial. We'll put Sizwe on trial after the break. But, the last caller is speaking to something interesting. Is South African hip-hop elitist in terms of who gets opportunities and who does not? What is your take, Ru?
I'm going to be honest right now. I think for me, it's the hip-hop. It's just in a state of, self-empowerment. Because, for example, Ricky right now, is doing tracks like Bayrak, etc., and he's making moves, business-wise and just brand-wise. But then prior to him being who he is right now, back in the days, he was dropping conscious, songs. But then he realized that, he had to empower himself in order to open doors. And that's what he did. And then I think that's what everybody's trying to do. They're just trying to empower themselves and just fill up the room, as much as they can, so that opportunities may open up, so that, doors may open up, so that they can actually convey the messages that they initially wanted to make. But then they just realize that, I actually need to make myself big in order for them, in order for the people to actually give me the attention that I deserve. So I definitely agree that, definitely opportunities, are there, but then it's just a matter of just, being, making yourself as big as you can. And that's what, as the hip hop artists are in right now. In that level right now, where they notice that, self-empowerment is key, for them to move forward.
Okay, let's leave it there. Ruth, thanks for dropping in, editor of Hype Magazine. We're going to take a break here. Some of those notions which, yeah, I must say, on my lefty ear doesn't sound very right. Make yourself big. It's very difficult to do that unless you have Sizwe Mpofu Welsh's social capital.
Bongani Bingwa, weekday afternoons, 3 to 6.
If you go to Marikana around 8 o'clock, it's pitch black dark. You can't police vans to go there.
And the best answer you can give is that it's simply too dark.
No.
Surely can't be acceptable.
Surely you've heard me when I said there were 40 additional police.
So why is it that surely those drug dens are still open? We still have illegal liquor outlets operating.
The reality is that area is not conducive for proper policing.
Spokesperson for the police, we are Maga.
Bongani Bingwa on 702, your number one news and talk station.
This is the sound of Donald visiting kia.co.za and seeing the 7 new Sportage models, each with a 5-year unlimited kilometer warranty.
Wow.
This is Praveen, who visited his Kia dealership and saw them up close.
Oh my goodness.
And this is Thuli, who bought one of the 7 new Kia Sportages from only 4,999 per month with zero deposit. Yeah! And this is Brian, who didn't.
Oh no.
It's no longer which SUV to buy, it's which Kia Sportage to choose. Kia, the power to surprise. T's and C's apply.
Turkish Airlines Sales Festival has begun. Buy your ticket until November 30th. Fly between October 1st and December 31st. Discover the world with Turkish Airlines special fares. We fly to more countries than any other airline. For more details, visit TurkishAirlines.com or call your travel agent. Turkish Airlines. Widen your world.
Luluwe has crafted over 25,000 jobs for young people across South Africa, harnessing opportunities from multiple stakeholders, both private and public. That's 25,000 lives, 25,000 households.
My name is Mpumi. Thanks to Luluwe, I have my first job.
Now I can afford the things I need. Now I can support my family. Creating employment in South Africa.
One job at a time.
Visit us at luluwe.co.za. Luluwe. Real people, real impact.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
16 minutes before 11. Sizwe, my good friend.
I'm never coming late again. I'm getting slated here.
People. You know what? Obviously, not being into hip-hop, I desire to be into hip-hop, but I just don't get hip-hop the way you guys do. Sure. So I always have to find like things in the world of art that are sort of close by,
yeah,
and then import those issues to be able to get some of the issues that you guys are going on about. Mm. And you are both a hip-hop artist and also now a published author.
Right.
And you know how difficult these conversations are in terms of writers. Who's allowed to tell what story?
Absolutely.
If you're Anton Harbour, are you allowed to go to Deep Slurt and write about people, and then you get under Kutama writing copious amounts of copy saying, how dare you?
Yeah.
You know, if you are Johnny Steinberg, are you allowed to go to the Eastern Cape Lusikisiki and then write a story there? If you are Sizwe Mpofu Welsh, are you allowed to drop all these bars and lyrical content about poor people when actually Edwin Cameron is your godfather? Discuss, 50 marks.
Look, well, firstly, I think there's a difference between racial appropriation and other forms of appropriation in South Africa. Mm. So, you know, firstly, if you do actually have, you know, family that are in poverty in the rural areas of the Eastern Cape, then I think you probably do have more of a right to speak about that than Anton Harbour, for example. So I think what happened in the article that was written in The Plug, which sparked this debate, was that it confused racial appropriation with appropriation. But I also think we need to give artists, and we do this for white artists, by the way. There's no big debate about, you know, whether white artists are, you know, doing paintings that reflect, you know, inequality. But when it comes to black artists, you need to give people the freedom to occupy different positions, rhyme from different positions. You know, there's the static view of hip hop as if rappers rap from their own position. In the album, I occupy the position of different perspectives, and I rap from different perspectives as different people, which is often something that's been done in hip-hop. So I think that artists, and particularly black artists in South Africa, do need that leeway. We need a much more sophisticated conversation about privilege.
Yes.
Because, sure, I did go to St. John's, And my
we
parents,
all have a past, dude.
It's funny, but my past is like the stylized past, which starts in my high school years. You know,
yeah,
and my parents,
enough.
My parents' story. You know, when I was
starts
born,
at Vitz campus.
Yeah, my father was a student at Vitz, crazily poor. My mother was a lecturer, and you know, at that point, it really didn't look and it was apartheid, and it didn't look like things were going to be rosy. Mm. You know, and they fought very hard when I was born. And
were you also born a crime?
Yeah, well, you know, the audiobook is coming. Don't worry, the audiobook is coming. But for any black South African, you know, I don't think people realize how high your income has to be. Let's not talk about wealth, because in the book I speak about how black people don't have any wealth, and there's a lot of important economic data on that. I know that my father is really relatively well off, and he's a very successful advocate. But even he struggles to overcome the legacy of apartheid and the army of family that he has to support. And so this notion that we can equate that with some white student from St. John's who has this generational wealth where they don't even have to tap into their income. You know, my father actually dug into his own income to send me to St. John's, which was a huge sacrifice. And so there are questions that we need to ask. And I think there's a bit of an irony going on at this moment in South Africa, because a lot of us are getting ahead.
Mm.
But I say in the album, you know, that's a post-apartheid irony. When you get ahead, they take you back to their binaries.
Mm.
And everybody's pretending to be this purist while writing and having access to all these platforms. Let's all just accept we have a certain amount of privilege, often when we're talking on these platforms. But we're also implicated in apartheid history, in racism. And I'm not going to let anyone tell me that I've never experienced racism, because actually go to St. John's, go to Oxford, and see the kind of racism that you didn't even know existed in the birthplace of white supremacy.
Okay.
And if anyone says I can't talk about that, then I think they're sorely misguided.
Absolutely. Okay, we've got a caller on the line there. Let's see whether we can get a nice clear line there. We've got Big Star Johnson. How's it?
Yay.
Yo, I'm easy. How y'all doing that, sir?
Good, thanks. Good. Do you think it matters who raps about what in South Africa, or anyone is allowed to rap just like you can speak about whatever you want to?
To be honest, man, I think it doesn't really matter what you speak about as an artist, you know, in South Africa. The truth is, hip-hop as a culture, you know, overall, that's the only thing. Because I've been listening to the conversation, and I just want to give like 2 cents.
Sure.
I think like hip hop as a culture overall, you know, where it started as from inspiration, you know, it started from people who are hungry, people who were in the ghetto, you know, it's in the States, and they were really trying hard to make something of themselves. And right now where we at as a culture, you know, is at a point of we have stuff, you know, people celebrate the stuff that we got, the cars, we got the houses, we got the girls, you know. So I think when you want to tell a story, tell the story. You know what I'm saying? If you feel like breaking it down. I mean, you get your Jay-Z's who are able to tell you right now on the album 444, where he's talking about like the distribution of wealth. You know what I'm saying? Saying black people need to learn how to distribute wealth. But at the same time, he's the same guy who gave you Hard Knock Life for Us. You know what I'm saying? So as an artist, it's your reality that you speak about what you're experiencing. A lot of rappers have made it, so that's why they speak about the cars and they speak about the whatevers. But, you know, if you've experienced the reality, if you know someone with that reality of, yo, man, there's a hustle, there's a struggle, you can speak about it. I don't think you're limited to anything. Maybe the political issues are a bit difficult to tackle in this country, but I think in terms of, like, struggle and whatever, yeah, you can. If you're not a speak about it, yeah.
Oliver, he has a point. I mean, there's a sense in which everything that you write, everything that you perform and how you perform, anything that you produce as a musician necessarily stems from the sum total of your subjective experiences in the world.
Yes, he's right. But I think people conflate again the medium of the art and expression versus the message itself. And this is where I want to repackage Karen's argument on her critique of Sizwe. Hip-hop belongs to, fundamentally, voiceless people who have no access to other means of expressing themselves. Young black kids are not sitting on television every night delivering political commentary. Young black kids aren't on radio every day delivering political commentary. They have no proximity to people with power that can listen to them to enact any meaningful changes. So their only means of expression is hip-hop, right? And this is fundamentally poor black kids, unemployed on the corner, who make music in their back rooms and toilets. So the problem is, here comes Sizwe, speaks about exactly the same issues, perhaps from his perspective, and the media and the rest of the world hails him as a visionary because again, proximity to power, went to St. John's, went to Wits, went to Oxford. So all these powerful people probably know him through the institutions. And now package and brand his contribution to the culture as the best thing about the culture. When what he's doing, one, is not groundbreaking, it's nothing new. He just has a bigger audience, perhaps access to a bigger audience
Talk to me in bottom line terms. What is the implication of that? Caesar must take a vow of silence. He must write symphony because he's disrupt the European history of a different art form. I mean, that can't be the conclusion.
That's not the conclusion. And here's what I think the conclusion is: Caesar must, one, be conscious of his positionality and his access to institutions, power, and media, right? And then realize, wait, I'm saying exactly the same thing as poor kids in Khayelitsha, but I'm getting more airtime and more expression than them. I'm drowning out their voices voices. So practical things. If I was Caesar, for every radio interview I got, I was like, hey, there's a kid who did exactly the same. I'm bringing him along. Let's call him in on the line and let him share exactly that thing, right? Because he's conscious of the structural racism and division that exists, there is an immediate responsibility on him to then not allow his voice to drown out the voices he says he cares about.
I don't know if I agree with that. That sounds way too onerous. There's so many versions of this in this conversation in terms of globally right now, who's allowed to speak. I mean,
I'm not saying he's not allowed to speak.
I hear what you're saying, but it's right up there with, let's take probably a parallel example. It's like saying Eusebius, you know your article on black feminism wouldn't have landed as well if you were yourself a black female writer. So now every single time I get invited to talk, let's say about gender issues, I've got to say, you know what? I'd like to come on your show, but please can I bring Pumla Gola with?
I would say Pumla Gola wrote this and just verbatim repeat what she said.
No, but I also have my own thoughts, despite the fact that I have.
But male hers genitalia. Matters more than yours, right?
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does. She is female. Doesn't. She lives. She has the lived experience. You can only intellectually conceptualize what sexism is like. You can't emotionally package it because you haven't experienced it.
But I want to bring
like
you
that.
In here, Caesar, because for me, that's where you are just wrong about the intrinsic imaginative quality that an artist, by definition, gifts the world. It's like saying I cannot imagine straight sex, so I dare not write characters who are straight, and only the person who is straight can write those characters authentically. I mean, that's wrongheaded.
Well, look, I mean, the first point is that hip-hop is this romanticized voice of the subaltern in society, and that's just not true in South Africa. Hip-hop has actually always been implicated with privilege, and if my voice doesn't matter, then my goodness, what about every other artist that went to St. John's who's not even rapping about political stuff? If my voice should be excluded, I'm fine with that, but then we should exclude half the industry and most of its consumers. So we need to be consistent about whose voice should be heard and whose voice shouldn't. That's the first thing to say. The other thing to say is, look, I think positionality matters, but I'm in the position of speaking about racism in South Africa. Yeah. The gender critique is totally inapt because I am a victim of racism in South Africa. And so I can speak about racism because I've experienced it and I have songs about race. And those songs aren't just about race. They're about my implication in privilege and the irony of still being subjected to strange racisms that other people haven't seen because I'm in those spaces. So if people actually engage with the project, they'll hear that I do tackle the question and the paradoxes of being part of. I've got a song about going to St. John's, which is a rap song. So I think there's a simplistic view that's taken of this album, that I'm just up there singing about Oliver Tambo and let's, you know, free this. This is a complex album and it needs to be engaged on those bases, you know. Look, I think the point that Karen Williams made and the point that Oliver makes is important. Part of the reason why my voice is being heard is because I am close to social power. But there are a lot of people who are close to social power who aren't making social commentary. And so the question is, what do you do with that social power? They've been... Charlotte Matlake went to Columbia. Pixley Kaiseme went to Oxford, you know, back 100 years ago. The story of South Africans who've been implicated in privilege and have thus taken that privilege and tried to do something with it is a long one. And I don't know why I'm being singled out as the only person who ever had any privilege in South Africa.
I'm going to be controversial, but we'll give Oliver the last word.
Sure.
I think, and he's often very PC because it's favorable. I think it's because, and I'm a lefty and I'm saying this as a left egalitarian, it's because of the overreach of the critique of the left.
Look, yes, that's true. And how do we correct that? And I think this is, the government needs to listen to us about really correcting it. And here I'll make a very unpopular point. Claudia Motsoeneng had the answer. still does have the answer. I just think, again, the sort of power you went up against with that in action didn't allow for that solution. The 90% local content solution is what I'm talking about. The level of power you went up against, the level of capital you went up against, wasn't favorable to that solution. Mm-hmm. Again, so Slicker, this is where Claudio was disempowered in his attempt to empower the disenfranchised. So again, there was an attempt to solve this, but yes, like, white capital is just so powerful.
Okay, guys, thanks for coming in. So much more that we can talk about. We'll have to have another version of this, but the hour flew by. Thanks for your passion, your argumentation, and who knows, we might even play a track in the next hour if you're lucky from someone who went to St. John's.
I give up.